Like any priest, I spend a fair amount of time around sick people. But unlike those of you who are physicians or PAs or nurses, there's very little I actually do for sick people except visit them and pray for them, which is fine as far as it goes. But as they will probably tell you, it doesn't go that far most of the time. Sickness is the everyday in-life experience of vulnerability, finitude, whether it be the common cold or cancer. Sickness is the proleptic inbreaking of death. It is a foretaste of what it's like to have the world go on without you, to be nothing. Sickness is a reminder that life is fragile and limited, and that we're vulnerable, in other words, terminal. Sickness is a brush with death. And I wonder if that's why those of us who are well are so often threatened by sick people. Oh, we may send a card or make a call, but it can be hard to visit someone who's seriously ill. I wonder if that's why we're desperate for a cure for every new virus, every illness. Is that why we isolate those who are ill in modern hospitals, which are our version of leper colonies, and nursing homes rather than care for them ourselves? We touch them only wearing rubber gloves. Out in Samaria, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus meets 10 very sick people, 10 lepers. Why is Jesus going to Jerusalem? You know what awaits Jesus there in just a few months? Death. That Jesus is an outcast in Samaria and that he's on his way to death in Jerusalem makes this an interesting location to meet 10 lepers. Here are 10 people who've been cast out of family and home, made to wander aimlessly because they have been afflicted with a dreaded illness. Here are not only 10 sick people, but also, without stretching things too far, 10 dead people. They are marked for death, not just someday in the future, but now, today. Like Jesus, they are doomed to die. For as far as these lepers' families are concerned, they are dead. It takes a condemned person to know a condemned person. Out in Samaria, an outcast named Jesus meets 10 outcasts who are lepers. Moreover, at least one of them is a Samaritan, so he has 2 strikes against him, because the Jews hated Samaritans as another race, a corrupted, compromised people. So these are 10 dead men walking, if not spiritually, socially, dead. Standing well away from Jesus, as lepers were required by law to do, they cry out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And Jesus looks at them and tells them to go and show themselves to the priests. Here, Jesus is making reference to the 14th chapter of Leviticus that specifies what the priest is to do with a leper who happens to be healed. You see, a leper is not allowed in the temple because lepers were thought to be unclean. If cured, the leper must be ritually certified clean by a priest in order to worship at the temple. But Jesus' command to them is a bit confusing. They've asked to be healed, but Jesus does nothing to heal them. He's only told them to go and act as if they are healed. Go present yourself to a priest as if you're whole, healed, accepting, living people. Strange, but let's face it, Jesus is often strange, so they go. Luke doesn't say whether they went to the temple or just plain went bumping into each other to get out of the way of Jesus, who is talking and acting strangely. At any rate, they go, and they are healed. And 9 out of the 10 of them just keep going. Apparently, they make no connection between Jesus' weird reply and their recovery from leprosy. After all, Jesus didn't do what was expected. He didn't touch them with mud or spit as he once did with a blind man. He didn't command any demons to come out of them as he did with sick people. He didn't even say, "Be healed." As far as they were concerned, it's not exactly clear what Jesus did explicitly have to do with their healing. But one leper, a Samaritan, makes the connection. He comes back loudly praising God, and he falls at Jesus' feet saying, "Thank you, thank you, thank you." Luke notes, "And he was a Samaritan." So he was a two-time double dead duck. And once again, Jesus says the unexpected. "Hey, what happened to the other nine? Has only one come back to say thanks, and a Samaritan of all people? Get up and go your way. Your faith has saved you." So what is there to make of this medical miracle? One Samaritan leper had faith and was healed. The other nine, who implicitly had no faith, were also healed. What's the difference between the unthankful nine and the thankful one that Jesus highlights with his terse reply, "Get up and go, your faith has saved you"? Well, functionally speaking, the 10 lepers are all dead. Whether you're talking physically or spiritually or socially, they are dead. And they would love to be healed, which in this context means raised from the dead, resurrected, which they assume would send them back to their homes, to normal lives. That's all they ever really wanted, a chance to be like other people, a chance to go home and be like everybody else. What did Warren G. Harding call it? Normalcy. And they assume that is what Jesus, Mr. Resurrection, is all about, a return to normal, the revival of the ordinary for people whom, because of their illnesses or infirmities, are abnormal or subordinary. But one of the healed lepers, the Samaritan, realizes that this is new life. This is resurrection. And he alone comes back and says thanks. He realizes that his healing puts him in relationship to Jesus. And that relationship alone, has made him whole, alive again. And all the other nine wanted out of Jesus was to be made well, to go back home, to start over, to do what everybody else is doing, going to school, driving to work on Monday, drinking water out of plastic bottles, meeting a nice Galilean girl, maybe starting a family of nice, ordinary kids, owning a hybrid. And who could blame him? Later, these nice, normal nine would say, "Who, me? A leper? Are you kidding? I drive a hybrid. I've never been sick a day in my life, never." But that one Samaritan comes back, not only cured, but saved, because he alone saw that his healing, his resurrection, wasn't just for the future. It was for now. He was saved and accepted by Jesus now, while he was a leper, while he was still sick, untouchable, before he had gotten well. He alone realized that Jesus didn't want to make people well, much less normal. Jesus wants to raise people from the dead. Easter is now. Those poor healed nine lepers go away unsaved, precisely because they put their lives as lepers, as outcasts, as dead people behind them, and went on to nothing but the normal. All those years of suffering and indignity and pain and ostracism just vanish. "Who, me, a leper? Not me. I'm okay." The healing began for them not when they were healed, even a hospital could do that, but when they met Jesus, who took them, all 10 of them, leprosy, outcastness, deadness, and all, just as they were. But only one of them knew, so he alone came back to say, "Thanks, Jesus, I needed that." 9 got healed, but only one got saved. Your faith, your relationship to my accepting, embracing, life-giving, extravagant love, has saved you. Not your clear, clean skin, not your good, cleaned up normalcy. I have saved you, just as you are. I am here only for the sick. And for that, the Samaritan rightly says thanks. Just before this story of the cleansing of the 10 lepers, Luke tells the story of the prodigal son. Can you see that prodigal son on his way back home from the far country, brushing off his tattered clothes, trying to clean the pig slop off his shoes, attempting to kill the chief perfume of the harlots with some old spice, desperate to get normal, memorizing his penitent good little bad boy speech? Father, I have sinned. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Would you please treat me as one of your hired servants? No, no, no. Father, I've now seen the error of my ways and I want to do the right thing. I've done a lot of maturing since my sophomore year and I finally dropped out of the fraternity and Dad, look, Father, everybody makes mistakes. I'll admit I've made my share. That's all over now. But the father isn't waiting for any of that. Before the boy can get a chance to say anything about anything, the father takes the son on the only basis there is, the father's own extravagant, life-giving love. The boy can come back home, not by anything he said or done, untouchable sinner that he is, but only by the father's grace. My son, who was dead, is now alive. Resurrection. Easter is now. The son stuffed in his grimy pocket all those penitent speeches, all those declarations about what a nice, normal son he was going to be. The only thing the son could say was thanks. Of course, truth be told, that was the only speech the stay-at-home, normal older brother could make as well. The only real difference between the boys was that the younger brother knew his dependency on the father, and the older one didn't. And so it's the younger one who says, thanks. It's a gift. When will we ever get it through our heads? It's a gift. Can you say the word grace, boys and girls? When grace is offered, we are on our way to being saved, leprosy and all. Where are the other nine? Why aren't they leaping and shouting for joy, partying with the Father, having the time of their lives? Where are the other nine? They're back at work, back at business as usual, nothing more than the merely normal. Skin now clean and clear, lives progressing nicely, and everything so utterly, boringly normal. What a shame to have met Jesus, the Lord and giver of life, the one who loves to eat and drink with sinners, who takes us and embraces us just as we are, and to come away with nothing more than normal. What a shame for people to settle for Monday when they could have Sunday, when they could have Easter. What a shame on the road to death, and aren't we all, to have met Jesus headed toward the cross and come away only healed when you could have been saved. In 3 weeks' time, you're going to be asked to make a pledge. Some call it charitable giving and see it helping the church make its budget. Some know it as a way of saying thanks to God for what God's done. And unto them, life has been given. Amen.